Welcome to the Manor.
Welcome back to the Twin Terrors Macabre Manor of Mead, Metal, and Mayhem. I'm Jody.
And I'm James. And welcome Woo-hoo. To an episode.
The episode of what?
Oh, I just thought we both had episodes all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually, I've got an episode here. But for Jody, it's a surprise.
Yay!
Are we recording tonight? And I'm like, sure.
Well, we hadn't really, I don't know. We hadn't finalized plans.
We hadn't, but that worked out well. Jackie might have been up for another episode of Young Sheldon that we're re-binging. She actually told me an hour ago she was exhausted. So I thought, yeah, 7:30 my time is okay. And then she's like, well, you could do another, except you're going to game or record or something. I'm like, yeah. You want me to tell him? And like, she's like, no, because I'll probably still be asleep in 20 minutes if I go lay down.
Yeah.
So yeah, this worked out well. And I'm like, what topic? And you're like, I don't know. And I'm like,
ha, ha, ha. You frequently are like that, though.
I don't know what you're talking about. I certainly don't resemble that remark. See? So are you.
Yeah.
No, I was going to actually put all my topics into a pile and pull them out, but I didn't have them organized as neatly as I thought. And then I saw one. I'm like, ooh, I need to do that one anyway. And Jody doesn't have to prep for it. Let's do this one.
That sounds good.
Yeah, so I'll start here in a second. But before I start, too late. What are you having to drink?
Well, because it's because it is now winter, and the temperature is even though we are in North Alabama, I am in North Alabama. It is 40 degrees outside as of this recording. I'm having a Samuel Adams Cold IPA, crisp Ooh. And hoppy.
How are you liking it?
Well, I've when I've had it in the past, I've given it a rating of 4.0. So I do enjoy it, but I have not had an IPA in so long. I was a little surprised at how hoppy it was. And it's not like it's overly hoppy. It was just a little bit of a shock to the system.
That's rather hilarious to me. I had that, I don't know, a few days ago, the other day. I thought it was good. I just don't like cold IPAs much. There's something about the brewing process that makes it a little kind of weird to me. But
well, cold brewing is usually for lagers and not ales. So I guess that is a little weird.
Yeah.
As I talk with my mouth full as I'm eating a gingerbread cookie.
That's forgiven.
Okay.
By the way, I'm going to be switching it up soon because I bought this bottle of something specifically for this episode some time ago when I was making my notes for it.
Okay.
And someone who shall rename Lameless.
Uh-huh.
Sure. Opened it and used it for cooking, so I only had enough for about not quite a full wine glass work, but I'm having some wine tonight.
Oh, okay.
And I've got my second thing here that I'll go to as soon as I try the wine because I'm not a wine person.
Right.
But it's special for this episode, and I'm having Hermes Retsina White Dry Wine from Greece.
Nice.
Yeah.
I guess I've never had it.
It's smells nice. Smells, I don't know, grapey, a little fruity.
Okay.
Not bad. Not bad considering I'm not a wine person. It's okay.
It does not compare to the sangria you had, though, does it?
Oh, that sangria was phenomenal. Yeah, that's good that you and Rebecca got us. I don't know. It's not even that it's a dry. Dries aren't my favorite, but I do like some dries. This is okay. It's different. Okay. If I was a wine person, I'd probably like it.
Cool.
I'll get to my other drink here. In a little bit, because I also have a winter drink to go with it being winter time, but not with the episode. But the Retsina has to do with the episode, and we'll get to that towards the end. All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Ready?
Nosferatu, Cricket, Baseball, and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Nah, cool.
Woo! And you'll see how all this merges together sometime. Here, where's my book? Ha! I even got my. I've had this bottle of wine in the fridge for months, and I finished this book yonks ago, but I've kept it here ready to mention. It's like,
Yeah.
oh, okay, it still is here. Woo! Okay. Anyway, baseball was once thought to have been invented in 1839 by Abner Doubleday in Cooperstown, New York. But it is more likely that baseball developed from an 18th-century English game called Rounders that was modified by American Alexander Cartwright.
Yeah. I've actually been hearing this lately that Doubleday really didn't have anything to do with it.
No, we'll get to that here in a second. I've got a brief little thing on Rounders, but then yeah, I've got some things that talk about that.
Okay, cool.
So if you have something, just jump in when we get there here in about 2 minutes.
I really don't. I've just been seeing like stories online about how he didn't really do it. But I'll
Well,
let you go ahead.
that is accurate, though.
So.
Hey, Rounders. I'm going to go to Rounders real quick.
Okay.
Is a bat and ball game, bat and ball, like baseball, played between two teams where there's a striking and a fielding team that involves hitting a small, hard leather case ball with a wooden, plastic, or metal bat that has a rounded end. Players score by running around the four bases on the field, which sounds a lot like baseball.
Yeah, even
Oh,
I
but
know that, and I'm not a baseball fan.
I love me some baseball, and I seem to be in the minority anymore.
Sadly, yeah.
That's okay. I'm waiting for it to turn into Futurama's Burns Ball to get Americans excited about it again.
That would be awesome.
I would be okay if we started the Burns Ball League, kept baseball going, and just see who does better and let the winner take it.
Yeah. I do have something I can add to this later. Since you've mentioned Blurge Ball, and that just made me think of something, so
Okay, well, here I'll finish Rounders, and we'll
okay.
see where your thing we'll see where your thing fits in. It played in England since Tudor times. It is referenced in 1744 in the children's book, Little Pretty Pocketbook, where it was called Baseball.
Really?
Yeah, but the name baseball was superseded by the name Rounders in England, while other modifications of the game played elsewhere retained the name baseball. Which was well before
That's pretty cool.
1839, Mr. Doubleday. The gameplay centers on numbers of innings, which teams alternate between batting and fielding. And points, known as rounders, are scored by the batting team when one of their players completes a circuit past four bases without being put out. Yeah,
Wow, that also sounds amazingly like something else.
it does. Just also like you can get out if you hit the ball and the fielders catch it in the air and you get tagged and. Yeah, it's amazingly a lot like baseball. But back to baseball. So I don't know if this is where you want to jump in or if you want me to keep going.
No, you can keep. Mine can actually wait till the end because it's a more recent phenomenon.
Do do
Or
do do do.
phenomenon.
Do do
Whatever.
do.
Yeah, I know where you're going with that. Hey, by the way, I love that
The best.
song. Let me rephrase that. I love the Muppets doing that
Oh, okay, good point. I guess that's the only one I know.
song. I think it was like a hit back in the 60s before the Muppets started doing.
That makes sense. I mean, most of the things they did were, on the show were typically current popular things.
Yeah.
All right, but ready to go back to baseball?
Yeah, let's go back to baseball.
All right, the first professional baseball games were played in the wake of the young nation's darkest days. Ooh. The amateur version, however, had roots reaching decades before that. Reporters described baseball as a mania back in the 1840s, and the sport was already established as a popular pastime when Civil War soldiers on both sides played it as a diversion. Yeah, many veterans took the game home after the war, and it became a great unifier in the years that followed the bloodiest conflict in U.S. history, which kind of helps lead towards being America's game. And though since disproved, the invention of the sport was originally believed to have occurred in Cooperstown, credited to Civil War hero Abner Doubleday. Abner was at Fort Sumter in South Carolina when the first shots were fired in defense of the Union, and he went on to rise to the rank of Major General and served with distinction during the Battle of Gettysburg.
Cool.
So, he did that anyway, but
Yeah.
I've got a little timeline here where 1839, Doubleday is credited with inventing baseball in Cooperstown, but has been refuted. It's more folklore than anything else. And this actually comes from a 1905, so that's what, 66 years later?
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes from a 1905 committee report to the president of the National League that was obviously ill-sourced. The National League and American League had merged in 1903. Just as a little heads up there, and the National League started in 1876 as the National League of Professional Baseball Clubs that took over from the National Association of Baseball Players formed in 1871. To give context. Woo!
Context.
And the American League was formed in 1901 after the National League dropped teams from its merger with the American Association, known as the Beer and Whiskey League, for its tolerance of selling alcohol to spectators, which, is evidently okay now again. But 1845, Alexander Cartwright develops the rules of baseball and was a founding member of the New York Knickerbockers Baseball Club. Became one word in the so baseball here, I actually have a little note, became one word in the early 1890s when newspapers such as the Chicago Tribune wanted to save the space, because initially baseball was two words.
Okay.
And then 1846, the first official game of baseball is played between the Knickerbockers and a group of cricket players.
Cool.
Maybe.
Really?
Well, it's given as 1846. However, in October 1845, the Knickerbockers, recently organized under the name after several years' play at New York's Madison Square Murray Hill, played their first recorded game on October 6th in 1845 rather than 1846. And I'm going with this one. So heads up, if you see 1846, that is what some people have, but there are actually notes from 1845.
Cool.
Yeah. They commenced formal play in brisk weather. Knickerbockers managed to squeeze in 14 games before shutting down to await April 1846, the opening of a new season. The scoring of these contests survives in their game book, held by the New York Public Library, and gloriously is readily available to researchers. So that's why it's 1845. I could go into the inter-squad game showing how the Knickerbockers won and everything, but I'm not going to stress too much, partially because, the rules hadn't been completely set as far as the number of innings and anything like the runs per inning. So giving you game scores doesn't really count to anything as far as people in modern day would realize. The umpire of this practice game, this first one, was William Rufus Wheaton. I love that name.
That's kind of cool.
Who, by his own account, had reduced the rules of the Gotham Baseball Club to writing in 1837. A skilled cricket player, Wheaton came to prefer baseball in the 1830s. His Gothams also went by the name Washingtons, signifying either their primacy among baseball clubs or the possible origin among butchers and produce vendors of the Washington market. Wheaton told a reporter for the San Francisco Examiner for a piece titled "How Baseball Began," a member of the Gotham Club of 50 years ago tells about it. So he gives a nice little recap there 50 years later.
Cool.
Yeah, then it goes into more of his umpiring and stuff. And one of the big things is simply that he was a skilled cricket player and that many of the early New York baseballists had their teeth cut on cricket. And this was true of the Brooklyn players as well. And a game October 21st, conducted at the Elysian Fields, not the D&D chaotic good outer plane, but rather a baseball field. The Brooklyn Club, something, something. The hell, possibly not the same men who played the game October 10th, as no box score survives. That was it. So might be the same people I mentioned a minute ago, might not.
Okay.
But cricket in America, and I'm going to jump back,
Yeah.
and discuss cricket, not the sound that usually occurs when I tell jokes like that. Cricket was played by British colonists in North America at the start of the 18th century, with archived references to cricket played in America dating back to 1709.
Wow.
Yeah. A New York newspaper from 1739 contains an advertisement I was trying to be all cool and say advertisement like a Brit, but that came off wrong.
Yeah, that did not work well.
But contains an advertisement for cricket players in the first documented competition occurring in 1751 in Manhattan. And by 1793, Dartmouth College students were playing cricket on the green. Philadelphia was the crucible of North American cricket, remains so today. Haverfield College formed a cricket team in 1833, which is generally accepted as the first cricket club exclusively for Americans. Because, 1709, we were still British. And then we could go into rivalries with Haverford and U of Penn and their first match in 64, 1864, maybe being one of the first, well, being the first intercollegiate cricket game and believed to be the third oldest sporting contest, but I couldn't find the first two. Oh, I tell a lie. I did find the first two. It's a note down below in handwriting. Here we go. Believed to be the third oldest intercollegiate sporting contest after the 1852 Harvard-Yale crew, so rowing crew, and the 1859 Amherst-Williams baseball matches. So cricket started before baseball, but came after as far as college sports. Then we also have cricket in England, where it was created during Saxon or Norman times by children living in the Weald, an area of dense woodlands and clearings in southeast England that lies across Kent and Sussex. The first definitive written reference is from the end of the 16th century, so that'd be the end of the 1500s. Although there have been several speculations about the game's origins, with some speculative references from the 1300s concerning the future King Edward playing at Creagh and other games in both Westminster and Newenden. Generally believe that cricket survived as a children's game for generations before taken up by adults at the beginning of the 17th century. Possibly cricket was derived from bowls, aka lawn bowling, which to at least Americans were, Jody and I grew up in the Midwest and near Clinton, Indiana with the Little Italy Festival. It's similar to bocce ball, but not quite the same. And I wasn't going to keep going that far into different game rules, so I was going to stop there.
Probably a good idea.
Except just to mention, bowls is the older sport. There's the batsman trying to stop the ball from reaching a target, and they play on sheep grazed lands or clearings and stuff. And with cricket, the original implements may have been a matted lump of sheep's wool or a stone or lump of wood. And then you have a stick or a crook or another farm tool as the bat and stuff, and a stool or a tree stump or a gate, also known as the wicket gate, as the wicket. That'll give you a little heads up as to what the Hitchhiker's Guide part's going to be. And by the way, I finished that wine and I'm now having the fuck's a cold. I just memorized it before I started recording and now I don't remember. It's some sort of peppermint mocha Italian liqueur. Quite tasty, very low in alcohol, like 15-20%. Horribly thick and probably 1,000 calories in my little snifter glass. But it's damn good on a cold night because it's also in the 40s here. After hiking 10 miles in the rain, it's good.
I saw that.
And the first definite reference was John Derrick, the pupil at Royal Grammar School, then the Free School in Guildford, when he and his friends played cricket, spelled CRECKETT, circa 1550. And then there's some other things with the court cases concerning ownership dispute over a plot of common land that also mentions the game cricket. And there's a coroner, John Derrick, a 59-year-old, testified that he and his school friends had played cricket on the site 50 years earlier when he attended the free school. The first reference to cricket being played as an adult sport was 1611, when two men in Sussex were prosecuted for playing cricket on Sunday instead of going to church.
Now you can't have a Sunday without a major sporting event.
Well, hell, I bet even 100 years ago that was taboo here in America.
Probably.
Now it's
At
all
least
people want
frowned
to do.
upon.
Do what?
I said at least frowned upon.
You shall clutch my pearls and tisk at you. And the first reference as an adult sport was 1611 with two men in Sussex. I just said that one in the same year. Here we go. Dictionary defined cricket as a boys' game, suggesting adult participation was very recent development. And the name cricket, the derivation, number of words are thought to possibly be the sources, with the earliest reference spelling cricket, like I just spelled,
Yeah.
deriving possibly from Middle Dutch crick, meaning a stick, or the Old English crack or crack, meaning a crutch or staff, or the French word criquet or criquet, meaning a wooden post, which, as I read that and was being sarcastic, I realized that might possibly be where croquet comes from.
That's what I was thinking too, as soon as you said that.
Anyway, then the Middle Dutch word krikstoel means a long, low stool used for kneeling in church, resembling the long, low wicket and the two stumps used in early cricket. Somebody else mentioned cricket derives from the Middle Dutch phrase for hockey, met de cricketschen, with the stick chase, which
Okay.
I'm assuming that's where Canadian hockey is. Well, hockey, ice hockey. I guess Canadians are well known for it, but you know what I mean. But I didn't look that up because, again, as I'm reading this, I'm like, oh, yeah. However, it's more likely that the terminology of cricket was based on words in use in Southeast England at the time, and given trade connection with the county of Flanders, especially country of Flanders, especially in the 15th century, when it belonged to the Duchy of Burgundy, where many Middle Dutch words found their way into Southern English dialects. A bunch of rules that I'm not going to read all of them because nobody wants me to really read a bunch of cricket. But the reason I got into cricket lately is, so Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, we'll talk about here in a second, but there are scenes with cricket in it.
Yeah.
But then one of the podcasts I listened to, they had a guest on it. His name was David Bumble Lloyd, and he wrote a book called Around the World in 80 Pints.
Okay.
Really good. His little subtitle is My Search for Cricket's Greatest Places. And he talked about cricket and drinking and how to play and countries and drinking and hanging out with cricketers and drinking with them.
I'm noticing a pattern.
You're so smart.
It's it got something to do with cricket.
No, so I'll mention that I've got a couple notes with him here when I get towards the end, but wanted to mention it, and it's quite good. But it's cricket is a little more bizarre to Americans. If anybody knows what it is, you understand. If not, it's kind of weird because they can range from informal weekend afternoon encounters on village greens to top level international contests spread over 5 days and test matches. It's played with bat and ball, involves two competing sides or teams of 11 players. You have an oval field with a rectangular area in the middle known as the pitch. That's 22 yards by 10 feet wide, and two sets of three sticks called wickets are set into the ground at each end of the pitch. And across the top of each wicket lies horizontal pieces called bails, which, if you've read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you'll recognize those terms.
Yeah.
But sides take turns batting and bowling, or pitching, but they bowl the thing, and each turn is called an innings, always plural. Sides have one
Interesting.
or two innings each, depending on the prearranged duration of the match, with the object being score the most runs, with bowlers delivering the ball with straight arm, trying to break the wicket with the ball so that the bails fall. That's one of the ways the batsman gets dismissed or put out. Yeah, but a bowler delivers six balls at one wicket, and a different player from the side bowls six balls to the opposite wicket. So it's not just a home base, but you actually kind of flip around a bit.
I've seen that.
It's
Still
kind of
don't
weird, isn't it?
understand it, but yeah, I've seen that.
I mean, there's more. I don't know how many I want to do this, but you can just keep going. You can get as many runs as possible as long as you're not get caught out. And if the batsman hits the ball into the boundary area without it touching the ground, that's 6 points. The batter hits the ball into the boundary area, but it hits the floor before getting there, that's 4 points. Easy, right? Yeah, but you can also score points without hitting the boundary. So you hit the ball and you try to run to the stumps at the other end. But if the other team gets the ball before the batsman has reached the white line in front, known as the crease, he's out of the game. It's It's fun. I when after I read the book, I watched several videos, and it's fun and interesting. Here, you keep going when you're out. The next teammate batsman comes up, and you keep going until all 11 players are out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's not just three outs, but all 11 players have to get out. But again, you only have one or two innings.
No wonder they take 5 days to play it.
Yep. The game, which can take up to 5 days to finish, is considered over. But both teams have been in and out at batting, and that's about it. And there's tons of obscure rules that I started looking up and I started watching videos on, and it's neat as hell. And I'm not going to go into those. That's Jesus.
All right.
But it's interesting. It's neat. I mean, if you like American baseball, you might like cricket. It's very different, and you may not. It's yeah, different enough. It's a little slower, which baseball's not quick to begin with.
Right.
Hence why most Americans probably do prefer football and basketball.
Yeah.
But they're just not as cerebral as baseball fans. All right, my next little bit happens to be about Hitchhiker's Guide. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Life, the Universe, and Everything, the third book by Douglas Adams in the larger than three book trilogy. So as Jody and I record this, it's 2023, but it's not, very, very late, only a few more days left in the year. So it's not coming out till 2024. And in 2024, this will be the 20th anniversary of the radio adaptation, which was the first to be a book rather than a radio performance. But the book itself in 2024 is celebrating its 42nd anniversary. 42. Ooh.
There you go.
Yeah, it's published August 1982. If you don't get the 42 reference and why it's funny in this particular instance, either read the first Hitchhiker's Guide or go back and listen to some of our episodes on Hitchhiker's Guide. And honestly, I went back and listened. We already discussed this quite a bit, which is why I'm going to just touch on three things real quick. The first is that they land. So in the beginning of the book, Ford and Arthur are back in prehistoric times, but they find a Chesterfield couch.
Yes.
That takes them back to where they need to go so they can be rescued by Slarty Barkfast and his Bistromath to go save the planet and the universe and everything from the planet Cricket and the Cricket robots. Earth is only one of the few places that actually celebrates cricket because Earthlings are benightedly stupid.
Yes.
No disagreement here.
After the day I had, yes.
Out of these three things, the first is that when they get on this Chesterfield couch and they go back through the time, timey-wimey, warple, flotsam, jetsam wash of time-space continuum, they land at Lord's Cricket Ground 2 days before the Earth is going to be destroyed by the Vogons, which happens in the first book, so it's not a spoiler. If you're listening to this, you should already know what's going on. When I read it as a young American, young American, young American. All right. I have that in my notes. I assume this was a special place because Douglas Adams specifically mentions it. And Arthur's all like, as a young lad, I always wanted to bowl on Lord's Cricket Ground. And when I read David Bumble Lloyd's book, Around the World in 80 Pints, My Search for Cricket's Greatest Places, he goes into detail about all sorts of grounds and places and how to play and backs up what Adams says by Lord's being one of like the Wimbledon of cricket grounds, more like he doesn't say that, but I'm saying it so people get the idea.
Wow. Okay.
Wasn't just Arthur and Douglas Adams, it really is an important thing.
So it's like their Yankee Stadium.
You misspelled Wrigley Field, but sure. Point number two, it's why I'm drinking Retsina, a Greek white resinated wine. It's exposed to tree resins for some of its flavor. It's the wine Arthur found in his duffel bag while learning to fly, and that got him into the floating party to find the bale that would help make the wicket gate that would release the cricket world.
Oh,
Yeah, so Douglas Adams takes a bunch of cricket things besides the cricket robots being dressed like cricket people and they having little balls like cricket balls that can be hit by cricket bats that can explode or detonate or, all sorts of different things. Yeah, I kind of already went to the little bit of, so it says maybe give a brief recap of the story after all, but I already did that, so I'm good. But also to mention the book, as I have mentioned before in a previous episode, but it's worth mentioning again, I think it is based off a script Adams had written for Doctor Who called Doctor Who and the Cricket Man, a great story, which wasn't ever produced because of weird things at BBC that we did go into when I did that episode. I read the book. Well, somebody took the screenplay and turned it into a book. I actually don't have that guy's name, which kind of sucks for him, but life goes on.
Yeah.
But it's a great story. It's neat to see how Adams translated the Doctor Who story into the characters for Hitchhiker's Guide, and we already discussed that as well in one of the previous episodes. But other than that, I think my last note is, oh yeah, Doctor Who, huh? Yeah, David Tennant was one of the Doctor Who's. He voiced Scrooge McDuck. And that was the last note I have, was Scrooge McDuck.
Why am I not surprised?
Look, Mary, it's Scrooge McDuck. That's what I have, a little origins of baseball, little origins of cricket, and those wrap up into the 42nd anniversary of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy's third book, Life, the Universe, and Everything.
right,
With
cool.
cricket robots who are sharper than the Sharpies. We should let everybody go so they can go watch a game of cricket or baseball or read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Or all those things.
That'll be a long day.
Yeah,
Maybe even five. Yeah, so while you're at it, well, when it's commercial or between innings or whatever, give us a rating, review us, write us, do the things, and come back next week and we'll have something else. Until then, I'm Cricket James.
I'm Rounders Jody.
I almost spit my coca mint. Walker. We'll hitchhike at you later.
Bye.
The Macabre Manor is brought to you by the Twin Terrors. All rights reserved. Stay tuned for some fun outtakes.
Yeah, what you said.
Yeah, don't ask me to repeat it.
Repeat it. Ah!
No.
You'll get nothing
No.
I'm ready when you are. This is going to be a rambling episode.
Ramble, ramble, ramble.
You sound like the Hamburglar.
Yeah, kind of did, didn't I?